You are listening to rudolfsteineraudio.com. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Manifestations of Karma. This is Lecture 7, which is entitled Karma in Relation to the Forces of Nature, Volcanic Eruptions, Earthquakes, and Epidemics, given in Hamburg on the 22nd of May, 1910. You will have noticed in these lectures that we are approaching our goal step by step, and that with each step we are trying to penetrate more deeply into our subject. In the last lecture, we spoke of the nature of pain, which may be connected with the course of an illness. We also pointed out in how in other cases an illness may run its course, at least in a certain sense, without being accompanied by pain. We must now consider the nature of pain in somewhat more detail. We must keep before us the fact that pain may become apparent side by side with illness. In our last discussion, we already concluded that we may not look upon disease and pain as inseparable. We must be aware that if pain is connected with an illness, there must be something more at stake than mere illness. We have pointed out that the process taking place during the transition from one incarnation to another, whereby events of earlier incarnations are transformed into causes of illness, is influenced on the one hand by the luciferic principle and on the other by the Ahrimanic principle. How do we lay the foundation of illnesses? Why do we acquire a predisposition for illness? What induces us between death and a new birth to prepare forces which will manifest as illness in our next life? We are impelled to this when we see our own weakness in the face of the temptations of Lucifer on the one hand and those of Ahriman on the other. All our greed, egotism, ambition, pride, vanity, all qualities connected with a sort of inflation of our ego, with the desire to be in the limelight, all this is the result of luciferic temptations. In other words, if we fall victim to the forces active within our astral body, so that they find expression in our egotistical greeds and passions, we are in that incarnation performing actions to which we are tempted by Lucifer. And during the period between death and a new birth, we see the results of such deeds inspired by Lucifer. We then contract the tendency to incarnate in conditions where we shall have to suffer an illness, which, if it is overcome, will free us still further from the clutches of these luciferic powers. If the luciferic powers did not exist, we should not fall into those temptations that induce us to develop further in that way. If there were nothing else in life but the egotistical impulses and passions born of Lucifer, we should never be able to free ourselves from them, not even in successive incarnations, for we should ever again succumb to them. Suppose, for instance, we had been left to our own devices during Earth evolution, but were still subject to the luciferic influence. We should have the temptations of the luciferic powers in one incarnation, and then, after death, perceive where they had led us. This would bring about an illness, but if nothing else cooperated, the illness would lead to no great improvement during the life in which it is experienced. It leads to an improvement only because other powers, whom Lucifer opposes, add something to the whole process. In other words, when we succumb to the luciferic powers, the powers whom Lucifer opposes immediately intervene to try and build up an opposing force by which the luciferic influence can actually be driven out of us. And these powers, whom the luciferic powers oppose, add the sensation of pain to the process caused by Lucifer's influence. So we have to view pain as something which the benevolent powers give us in order that the pain we suffer may wrest us away from the bad powers and help us not to succumb to them again. If the disease process which results from succumbing to the luciferic powers was not accompanied by pain, we would simply conclude it's not so bad after all to yield to the influence of Lucifer. And there would be nothing within us that could make us apply our forces to escape from the luciferic powers. Pain, which is the astral body's consciousness in a wrong waking state, is also that which can help us not to fall prey again to the luciferic powers in that realm where we have already succumbed. In this way, pain serves to educate us in relation to luciferic temptations. Now please don't object, quote, "How can we be educated by pain when all we do is feel it, without becoming aware of its beneficial powers?" Close quote. It is only our capital I consciousness which prevents us from attaining such awareness. In the consciousness I describe to you as lying beneath our I consciousness, the following takes place, even if we don't realize it, in our normal waking consciousness. Quote, "Now I am experiencing pain, and this is brought about by the good powers to counteract my transgressions." Close quote. This is a force in our subconscious mind, acting truly as karmic fulfillment, as an impulse to fall no more into those deeds, inclinations, and greeds that brought about the illness. Thus we see how karma acts, how we fall prey to the luciferic powers, how these powers effect an illness in the following incarnation, and how beneficent forces add pain to the organic trouble, so that through the pain we may educate the subconscious. We may therefore say that in every case where pain makes itself felt, we are dealing with an illness provoked by the luciferic forces. Pain is a sign that the luciferic power lies at its roots. People who go in for classification will now be longing to distinguish these illnesses that are due to purely luciferic influence from those which can be traced to purely Ahrimanic influence. For in all theorizing, it is most convenient to classify, to make formula, and people delude themselves into believing that they have comprehended much in this way. In reality, however, things do not arrange themselves in such a way that they can be grasped in this convenient manner. In reality, they continually intercross and interpenetrate. And it will be easy to understand that during the course of an illness, there are phenomena which may be attributed in part to Lucifer's influence, to the activities of our astral body, and others which are traced to the Ahrimanic influence. Thus, no one must believe that if we feel pain, it is attributable only to luciferic influences. Pain reveals that part of our illness is attributable to luciferic influence. But this will become clearer if we ask where the Ahrimanic influence originates. We should not have fallen prey to Ahrimanic influence if we had not first succumbed to that of Lucifer. Through the luciferic influence, there came about the relation of the four elements constituting the human being: the physical body, etheric body, astral body, and the I. A relation which would not have existed if only the powers whom Lucifer opposes had operated. In that case, we should have developed quite differently. Thus, the luciferic principle caused disorder in the inner being of man. However, it is entirely a question of our inner being how the world outside affects us. Just as we cannot see the world when we have imperfect eyes, so through luciferic influence we are prevented from seeing the external world as it really is. And because of our incapacity to see the external world as it really is, the Ahrimanic influence has been able to insinuate itself into this inaccurate picture. So it is the luciferic influence on us which has made Ahriman's approach possible. Due to the Ahrimanic influence, we can fall prey not only to egotistical passions, urges, greeds, vanity, and pride, and so forth, but now egotism can affect the human organism to such an extent as to develop organs through which we see the external world distorted and inaccurate. Ahriman has insinuated himself into this inaccurate picture, and under his influence we succumb not only to inner temptations, but also to error. We fall into untruth in our judgment of the external world, and our assertions concerning it. Thus Ahriman acts from outside, but we have made it possible for him to reach us. In that way, the Ahrimanic and Luciferic influences are never separated. They always react upon one another, and in a certain sense keep a balance. Lucifer manifests outward from within. Ahriman acts from without, and our picture of the world is formed between the two. If in one incarnation the inner human being gains in strength, if that individual is more exposed to the inner influences, then he will succumb more easily to Lucifer, when his pride, his vanity, and so on will come into play. In an incarnation in which a person is not, through his general karma, predisposed to yield to inner influences, he will be more inclined to fall prey to error and the temptations of Ahriman. This is what actually happens. So that in daily life we at one moment fall prey more to the temptations of Lucifer, and at another to those of Ahriman, and we oscillate between these two influences, which lead us, the one to inner conceit, and the other to illusions about the external world. Since it is a matter of singular importance, I might mention that the temptations from both sides must be especially resisted by anyone who is called to a spiritual development, and who wishes to penetrate into the spiritual world, whether by penetrating into that external spirituality which lies behind the phenomena of the external world, or whether by descending mystically into his own inner being. When we penetrate the world which lies behind the physical world, we always find those deceptive images which Ahriman conjures up. When a person tries to descend mystically into his own soul, he is exposed to the temptations of Lucifer in a special degree. When he tries to descend blissfully, without having previously taken precautions against pride, vanity, and so forth, when he succeeds in living as a mystic without having given heed to a special moral culture, he is the more liable to fall victim to the temptations of Lucifer, who acts upon the soul from within. If a mystic has not given careful heed to his moral culture, he will be in great danger, when penetrating his inner being, of calling forth even more strongly than before the reactionary forces of Lucifer, and of becoming even more vain and proud than he formerly was. For this reason it is essential, first, to ensure that through the forming of our character we are able to resist the temptations of vanity, conceit, and pride to which we shall be exposed in any case. We can never do enough toward the acquisition of such qualities as lead to modesty and humility. This is essential for that aspect of our development which we call mystic. On the other hand, it is necessary to defend ourselves against the delusions of Ahriman when we attempt to reach the spiritual origin of things by following the path which leads behind the phenomena of the external world. If we do not form a strong and steadfast character, which enables us to fortify ourselves to acquire a strong inner life, it may well happen that just at the moment when we are succeeding in going out into the spiritual world, we fall into the clutches of Ahriman, who will beguile us by illusion upon illusion, hallucination upon hallucination. I have often found that people take what I say a bit too literally, because I often emphasize how important it is that any form of spiritual development aimed at penetrating the sense-perceptible world must be undertaken in full consciousness. It happens again and again that people bring along some somnambulist individuals who assure me that they really do perceive the spiritual world and in full consciousness. The only thing that can be done is to assure them that it would be far better for them and far wiser if they did not have this full consciousness. For people are mistaken as to the nature of this, in quotes, consciousness, which is merely an image or astral consciousness. If these people were not conscious in a lower degree, they would not perceive anything. And what matters is that we should, on entering the spiritual world, maintain the integrity of our I consciousness. With the I consciousness, however, is linked our power of judgment and our faculty for acute discrimination. This is what is lacking regarding the forms which they see in the spiritual world. That such people should have some consciousness is in no way remarkable, but the consciousness they should have is that which is linked to the culture of our I. That is why, during our development toward the perception of the higher worlds, we are not so keen on reaching these higher worlds as speedily as possible, on seeing a world filled with images and all kinds of forms, on hearing perhaps all kinds of voices. Rather do we emphasize the fact that entrance to the spiritual world can only bring happiness or be of advantage when our consciousness, our faculty of discrimination and discernment, and our power of judgment have been so sharpened that in the higher worlds we shall be subject to no delusion. This can best be achieved by studying the truths of spiritual science. For this reason, we insist that the study of spiritual science is the best safeguard against these alleged visions, which by their nature are not capable of being brought to the test of a sound judgment. Anyone who is properly schooled in this way will not accept everything that comes his way, but will be able to distinguish between reality and a mirage. He will also know that auditory perceptions must be treated with the greatest circumspection, for no such perceptions can correspond to reality unless the hearer has previously passed through the sphere of absolute silence. Anyone who has not first experienced the absolute silence and calm of the spiritual world may be certain that what he perceives are delusions, even though what they convey to him seems most portentous. Only people who have taken the pains to fortify their judgment through their very efforts at understanding the higher worlds will be protected from such delusions. The means offered by science are insufficient. Science does not provide us with a power of judgment sure enough and strong enough for true discernment in the spiritual world. That is why we say that if information concerning the higher worlds is given us by people who have not carefully fortified their power of judgment, and this can be done through the study of spiritual science, such information is always questionable, and must, in any case, first be checked by the methods attained through genuine training. From this we see that Lucifer and Ahriman do not suspend their temptations when we strive for a higher development. There is but one power before which Lucifer retreats, and that is morality, which burns him like the most dreadful of fires. And there is no means by which to oppose Ahriman other than a power of judgment and discernment schooled by spiritual science. For Ahriman flees in terror from the wholesome power of judgment acquired upon earth. In the main, there is nothing to which he has a greater aversion than the qualities we gain from a healthy education of our I consciousness. for we shall see that Ahriman belongs to a very different region, far removed from that force of sound judgment which we develop in ourselves. The moment Ahriman encounters this, he receives a terrible shock, for this is something completely unknown to him, and he fears it. The more we apply ourselves in our life to develop this wholesome judgment, the more do we work in opposition to Ahriman. This appears particularly in all kinds of people brought before one, who recount from dawn to sunset all they have seen in the spiritual worlds. And if one attempts to give to these people some explanation, and to develop their judgment and discernment, Ahriman generally has them so completely in his power that they can hardly enter into the discussion. It is even more difficult to get them to listen to reason when Ahriman's temptations come to them from the auditory side. There are many more ways of dealing with delusions which appear as images than with those which come acoustically, in voices heard and so forth. Such people have a great aversion to any serious study that would contribute to the development of their eye consciousness between birth and death. But it is not they themselves who do not like it. It is the Ahrimanic forces that drag them away from it. If one leads those people so far as to develop a sound power of judgment, and they begin to accept instruction, it soon becomes evident that the visions, voices, and hallucinations cease. They were merely Ahrimanic chimera, and Ahriman is possessed by fear as soon as he feels that from out of this person there comes forth a wholesome power of judgment. In fact, the best remedy against the particularly harmful diseases which result in visions and delusory voices induced by Ahriman is to do everything possible to induce the person to acquire a wholesome and rational judgment. In many such cases, this proves extraordinarily difficult, for the other powers make things very easy for the deluded ones and guide them on. But anyone who attempts to expel this power cannot take things as lightly as that, and in consequence finds his task a difficult one. For the people affected in this way will then often maintain that they are being deprived of that which before had led them into the spiritual world. The truth of the matter is that they are being healed and safeguarded against further encroachment by these powers. We now know what the luciferic and Ahrimanic forces abhor. Lucifer is not at all pleased if human beings conduct themselves with humility and modesty, guided by a sound judgment of who they are. On the other hand, he is present like the flies in the dirty room whenever the qualities of vanity and ambition arise. All this, and the illusions which we engender about ourselves, prepare us to receive Ahriman as well. Nothing can defend us against Ahriman unless we really make an effort to think wholesomely, as life between birth and death teaches us to do. And especially we, who stand on the rock of spiritual science, have every reason to emphasize again and again, and as strongly as possible, the fact that it is not appropriate for us, as earth beings, to disregard that which is to be given us through life upon earth. People who disdain the acquisition of a wholesome judgment and power of discrimination, and who aspire to a spiritual world without making this effort, are really trying to shun earth life. They, being of the opinion that it is really far too trivial an occupation for them to concern themselves with matters that may lead to an understanding of this life, aspire to soar above it. They consider themselves superior, and it is just this frame of mind which constitutes a fresh cause of pride. For this reason, we frequently find that people with an inclination to getting carried away, to avoiding contact with the earthly world and all it entails, refuse to learn, quote, because they are already in the midst of it all, close quote, and do not wish to be associated with a movement such as ours. Such people say humanity must enter the spiritual world. Certainly, but there is only one healthy plan by which we can enter, and that is the morality acquired on earth in a higher sense, a morality that will keep us from overestimating ourselves and will make us less subservient to our impulses, greeds, and passions. And it is furthermore our active, wholesome interaction with the conditions of earthly life, as opposed to wishing to soar above earthly matters. Here we have drawn from out of the depths of karma something connected with the depths of spiritual life. This may be of great value, but nothing from the spiritual world is of value to the development of the human being and of his individuality unless it be brought forth from the spiritual world with sound reason and with morality. When considering all the discussions of our last lecture and those of today, we might ask, quote, why should not the Luciferic influence, for the very reason that it worked earlier and has been transformed into illness, and then equalized through the pain, why should it not call forth in us, draw after it, as it were, the Ahrimanic influence? And why should not that which causes us pain and announces the Luciferic influence of a disease, why should not the Ahrimanic influence take part in this as a consequence of the Luciferic influence? How does the Ahrimanic influence work? How are the temptations of Ahriman turned into causes of illness? How do they manifest in later incarnations? Whatever is attributable to Ahrimanic influence is indirectly attributable to Lucifer. When, however, the Luciferic influence has been so strong as immediately to call forth the Ahrimanic influence, then this influence is all the more insidious. It anchors itself not only in the transgressions of the astral body, but also in those of the etheric body. It manifests in a consciousness lying deeper than our pain consciousness, causing damage not necessarily accompanied by pain, damage that renders useless the organ which it attacks. Let us suppose that in one incarnation an Ahrimanic influence had been exercised on a person, bringing with it certain consequences. Now, the individual concerned passes through the period between death and a new birth, and reappears in a new incarnation. Then it will become manifest that some organ has been attacked by Ahriman. In other words, the etheric body has entered this organ more deeply than it should, more deeply than normal. In such a case, precisely because of this defective organ, the person is even more open to the temptations of error, which are the work of Ahriman upon earth. By means of the organ which owes its defect to the Ahrimanic influence, and into which the etheric body has too deeply penetrated, the person would, if he were to experience the whole of this process, become even more enmeshed in what Ahriman can effect, namely, Maya. Since nothing produced by the material world as Maya can be carried into the spiritual world withdraws further from him. For in that world there is only truth and no illusion. The more we become entangled in the illusions effected by Ahriman, the more are we impelled to enter even further into the external world of the senses, into the illusions of the physical senses, much further than would be the case without the defective organ. A counteracting effect comes into play, however. Just as we have the effect of pain counteracting the Luciferic influence. This means that at the very moment when there is a risk of our being linked too closely with the physical world of the senses and of our losing the forces which could lead us up into the spiritual world, the organ is destroyed. It will either be paralyzed or else rendered too weak to be effective. A process of destruction takes place. Thus, if we see an organ approaching destruction, we must realize that we owe this to beneficial forces, the organ is taken from us, so that we may find our way back into the spiritual world. When there is no other way, certain forces do in fact destroy our organs or weaken them, so that we may not become too greatly entangled in illusion. Let us take the case of a person who has a disease of the liver, but such as is not accompanied by pain. We are here dealing with the effect of a preceding aramanic influence, which has resulted in this disorder in the liver. If this organ had not been taken from him, the forces connected with a deeper penetration by the etheric body would have led him too far into Maya. Sagas and myths have always known of the deepest wisdom and have expressed it. Of this, the liver is a very good example. It is an organ most eminently suited to drive us into the physical, illusory world. And at the same time, the liver is the organ which binds us to the earth. This truth is connected with the fact that precisely that being, who according to the legend, gave us the force to guide us into earthly life and work effectively on earth, namely Prometheus, should have his liver gnawed by a vulture. A vulture gnaws at his liver, not because this would cause Prometheus any severe pain, for in that case the legend would not correspond with the actual facts. However, legends and myths invariably correspond with physiological facts. The vulture gnaws at the liver because it does not hurt, because the point was to show that Prometheus was bringing something to humanity through which human beings could become more deeply enmeshed in aramanic illusion if it were not for the possibility of compensation. Occult records are always in accord with the truths which we make known in spiritual science. I have shown you today, by a simple analysis of facts, that it is the beneficial powers which bring pain to us to react against the influence of Lucifer. Let us compare this with the records of the Old Testament. After Lucifer's influence had made itself felt, as is symbolized by the serpent's temptation of Eve, Lucifer's adversaries had to inflict pain to hinder what Lucifer was trying to achieve in human beings. The power whom Lucifer opposes had to appear and disclose that henceforth humanity should know pain. This was done by Jehovah or Yahweh when he said, quote, "In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children," close quote. Without the explanations of spiritual science, such accounts in the occult records are usually not interpreted correctly. Later, one realizes how profound these records are. That is why you cannot expect me simply to explain things out of a vacuum, without certain conditions being fulfilled. For me to be able to talk at all about the passage, quote, "In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children," close quote, I had to consider the karmic situation. Then the explanation can be given in the right place. Therefore, it is not much good to wish for one thing or another to be explained from occult records before the appropriate point in occult development has been reached. It is always regrettable when people ask, quote, "What does this mean? What is the meaning of that?" close quote. We must be patient and wait until we have reached the required stage. For with explanations alone, we shall achieve nothing. Thus we see our life affected by the Luciferic powers on the one side, and on the other by the powers whom Lucifer opposes. Furthermore, the aramanic powers work into our lives, and we must realize that those powers which incapacitate our organs when we fall prey to aramanic influences are among the beneficent powers whose adversary is Ahriman. What has been said so far will provide you with a good basis for looking deeply into the complicated workings of human nature, and you will conclude as follows. The Luciferic powers are those that have remained behind during the ancient moon period, and today, during our earth evolution, they influence human life by means of forces which are really moon forces. according to the opposite plan of those powers, for example, whom Lucifer opposes, these moon forces are not part of our earth evolution. In this way, Lucifer works into the intention of another being. We can now go back to an earlier epoch. If we accept that on the moon certain beings remained behind in their development to intervene in human life upon earth, we may be able to understand that also upon the ancient sun there remained behind beings who played a part upon the moon analogous to that played by the luciferic powers upon earth at present. In the present human being, we observe what may be described as a conflict. The conflict between the luciferic powers, which penetrate into our astral body, and those powers which affect us only through our earthly achievement. For the powers whom Lucifer opposes can only act upon us through our I capital. If we acquire a clear insight into and a true evaluation of ourselves, we do so only with the help of those powers which affect our I. For this, we must make use of our I. Therefore, we may say that while our I struggles with the luciferic powers, Yahweh or Jehovah is fighting within us against Lucifer. That which watches over the ordered cosmic design is fighting against that which rebels against this design and against its exclusiveness. Our innermost being stands in the midst of this strife between Lucifer and other beings. We ourselves are the battlefield of this struggle, and the fact that we are the battlefield in this fight draws us into karma, but only indirectly, through the fact that this battle is fought against Lucifer. If, on the contrary, we turn our gaze outward, we are attracted by the influence of the Ahrimanic powers. Something is enacted that comes from outside, and here Ahriman enters within us. We know that the ancient moon was inhabited by beings who passed through their human stage at that time, as we are now passing through it in the course of Earth evolution. In title Cosmic Memory and title Occult Science, these beings are referred to as angels, Angeloi, and Dionys. The name does not matter. Within these beings, a battle similar to the luciferic battle within our own souls took place, a battle provoked by those beings who had remained behind upon the sun. This battle upon the moon is in no way concerned with our inner I, for on the moon we did not yet possess our I. It is not concerned with anything in which our I takes part. Upon the moon, it took place, quote, within the bosom of the angels, close quote. So, these beings developed in a way which was possible only through the influence of the other beings who had stayed behind during the sun evolution. These beings who played the same part with regard to the Angeloi as the luciferic beings play with regard to ourselves today were the Ahrimanic beings, which during the whole of the sun evolution remained behind, as the luciferic beings did during the moon evolution. That is why we can only indirectly encounter these beings. It was Ahriman who, as it were, acted as tempter within the breast of the Angeloi, and he was active within them. Because of him, the Angeloi had become what they then became, and they have carried over with them what they acquired through Ahriman, as well as what they acquired in positive terms. One of our positive gains from Lucifer is our ability to distinguish between good and evil, the free faculty of discrimination, and our free will. All this we may attain only through Lucifer. The angels, however, have carried over into the earth the fruits of their struggle with the Ahrimanic powers, and this has fitted them for their present task as spiritual beings which surround us. Our inner I is not concerned with and takes no part in what these beings then experienced. nor in the effects of their experiences. We shall see, however, that we receive such experiences indirectly, because the Aramanic influence acts upon us. Through Araman, therefore, these beings have attained certain results caused during their moon existence, and these results are introduced into our earth existence. Let us try to trace in our earth existence the effect of the Aramanic battle of that time. If that Aramanic battle had not taken place on the ancient moon, these beings could not bring into our earth existence that which once formed part of the ancient moon existence. For that would have ceased to exist after the ancient moon had perished. Through the Aramanic influence, the angels became entangled in the moon existence, just as we, through the Luciferic influence, become entangled in earth existence. They received in their innermost nature something of the moon element and transported it into our earth existence. Because of this, they are in a position to raise up the forces which will prevent our earth from succumbing entirely to the Luciferic influence. The whole of our earth would have to succumb to Lucifer's influence if the results of the angels' battle against Ahriman upon the moon had not been brought into our earth existence. What then are the proceedings in the existence of the earth which we describe as normal? When our present solar system organized itself in accordance with the goal of our earth, that which we see as the regular movements of the earth and of the planets began, and brought it about that we have night and day, that the seasons of the year succeed each other in regular succession, that we have sunshine and rain, that our fruits ripen in the fields, and so on. Those are conditions which repeat themselves over and over again, according to the rhythm of the cosmos, which shaped itself for the present existence after the moon existence descended into the twilight. But within the earth existence, Lucifer works, and we shall see that he works a good deal more than merely in the domain outlined so far in the human being, which he nevertheless has made his most important domain. Even if Lucifer was only active on earth, human beings would succumb to what we call, quote, Luciferic temptation, close quote, not least through the conditions created by the regular course of the planets round the sun, the alternation of summer and winter, rain and sun, and so forth. If we were subject to everything that emanates from the order of the cosmos, everything generated by the regular rhythmical movements of the solar system, if only those laws appropriate to our present-day cosmos prevailed, we would be bound to succumb to Lucifer's influence, bound to develop a preference for the easy life over that which we are supposed to attain for our cosmic salvation. We would be bound to prefer the straight and regular course to a path of personal striving. That is why counterforces had to be created. Forces were created by certain processes intervening in the regular cosmic processes of our earth existence. These were most beneficial and normal for the ancient moon. But today their activity on earth is abnormal and endangers the regular course of earth evolution. These influences correct in a certain way. Let me read that again. These influences correct in a certain way what would come about as excessive inclination to a comfortable life, to ease and luxury, if the mere rhythmical order prevailed. And we see such forces, for instance, manifesting in violent hailstorms. So when that which otherwise would be produced by the regular forces of the earth is destroyed, a correction is brought about, which on the whole works beneficially, even though man cannot see it at first, because there is a higher reason at work than can be perceived by man. When the hail drives down into the fields, we can say that on the old moon, these forces which work in the hail were the regular ones, just as those are that work beneficially today in rain and sunshine. But now they rush in order to correct that which otherwise would be produced by the luciferic influence. And when the regular course is re-established, they rush in again to effect further correction. Everything that leads to further progressive evolution belongs to the forces of the earth itself. When the volcano throws out its lava, forces are working in it which are retarded forces brought over from the old moon in order that they should bring about a correction in earthly life. This also applies to earthquakes and other phenomena involving the elements. We shall find that much that comes from outside finds its justification in the general course of evolution. We shall see later how this is connected with the human eye consciousness. Many of the questions left open today will be addressed in that context. But one point on which we must be clear is that these matters represent only one side of human existence, of earth existence, and of the cosmic existence in general. If, on the one hand, we see in the destruction of an organ the beneficial activity of spiritual powers, and if we have found today that the whole course of earth evolution must be rectified by forces springing from the ancient moon existence, we must now ask how it is that we as earthly people, on the other hand, must try to rectify the harmful influences of the ancient moon forces. We surely feel that as earthly people we have not the right to wish for volcanic eruptions and earthquakes, nor may we ourselves destroy organs in order to assist the beneficial effect of the spiritual powers. At the same time, we can rightly say that the outbreak of an epidemic produces something we are seeking in order to compensate for something else. And we can assume that we are driven into certain conditions where we may suffer some injury, the overcoming of which will make us more perfect. What then of hygienic and sanitary measures? Could one not object, quote, if epidemics may prove beneficial, is it not wrong to take measures conducive to health and preventive of disease? Close quote. Someone might propose that nothing should be done to obviate natural catastrophes, claiming that this conclusion is entirely supported by what I said yesterday and today. We will find that this is not the case, but again only on certain conditions. For now we shall be ready, in the course of our next discussion, on the one hand, to understand how some organ of ours may be damaged through the workings of beneficial powers so as to prevent us from succumbing to Maya, and on the other hand, to become conscious of the effects we produce by obviating such beneficial influences upon ourselves by means of sanitary and hygienic measures. We will see that we have arrived at a point at which human beings arrive very frequently indeed, when an apparent contradiction emerges, and we feel impelled by the total force of that contradiction. We come close to the point where the Aramanic powers can influence us greatly. Let me read that sentence again. When an apparent contradiction emerges, and we feel impelled by the total force of that contradiction, we come close to the point where the Aramanic powers can influence us greatly. The likelihood of succumbing to deception is never greater than at a time like this, when we have reached a bottleneck such as this. And it is just as well that we have got into this, because now we can say, quote, it is the good powers which render one of our organs useless, since this is a counteraction against Ahriman. Therefore one would have to be completely irresponsible not to call for what one might term, quote, the beneficial countermeasures against the Ahrimanic powers, close quote. After all, measures of hygiene and the like would weaken this beneficial counter effect, close quote. We are in a bottleneck, and it is just as well that we have been led to this contradiction for once, so that we may reflect upon the fact that such contradictions are not only possible, but even a good discipline for our thinking, For when we have experienced how to get out of this contradiction, we will have applied some of our own inner forces, and this can give us the strength to resist Ahriman's deceptions. The end of Lecture 7.